Welcome to this interesting session with further details about our cloud video interop service that we are building together with our friends from Polycom. My name is Albert.
My name is Adam Jacobs. I'm the principal Microsoft architect at Polycom.
And we are going to present you more details about the cloud video interop service that I said Polycom is building, the RealConnect service for Office 365.
That's it.
How many of you have actually seen last week our Skype meeting broadcast? There are a few of you. Okay. For those, there will be quite a bit of duplication, but if you ever want to look back on what we are presenting, apart from going back to the Ignite presentation, please go to that meeting broadcast. We are going to cover quite a few topics here, and especially with regards to the user experience. So overall, we're going to anchor you on what types of things we are trying to solve. What will be the experience of this new video interop service that actually is hosted in Azure? And then we are going to go in great detail about the supported features, tell you a little bit more about the redundant architecture that we are building so that there is failover, and then give you a list of what are the next steps that we are doing in bringing this to you and what are the currently supported VDCs. So with that, we go ahead. I will yield the floor to Adam, who will be doing most of the talking, if I can keep my mouth shut.
Thanks, Albert. So first of all, I'm going to just touch on some of the challenges that we have today with just video interoperability in general. And that's obviously in relation to Skype for Business. So one of the things that we are very familiar with at Polycom is that our Microsoft customers are now moving wholly to Skype for Business meetings. So that everything is typically scheduled in Skype for Business. And the idea of organizing this meeting and inviting a video room system into that meeting is often not something that people think of. They basically think, you know, how can I join the meeting very quickly? How can I go into a room which is in many cases not even scheduled? You know, they'll just go into a room that's empty. And they'll want the ability just to join a call, a Skype for Business call, with any type of room system. So they may not have the new Skype room systems that Elia recently announced a couple of days back. They may just have an old Cisco device in a room that they need to bring into a meeting. And there are a number of challenges around that. And it starts off with, you know, what do I dial? What do I do? So this is one of the areas that we're going to discuss and touch on, and different ways that we're looking to solve it. The other thing is once you're in the meeting, what's the experience like? Is it similar? Is it confusing? Is the whole workflow, is it very different? You know, people that join Skype for Business meetings are obviously very used to seeing a roster list of participants, the ability to promote people and demote them and give them presenter rights. And also they're used to seeing content in a certain place and having controls around how that's displayed to users. You know, do they want to have, you know, the content full screen? Do they want to hide the gallery view, or do they want to see the gallery view, or perhaps pin specific participants so they can see them at all times? So maintaining that Skype for Business experience throughout the meeting is also something which is important but often lost with various video interoperability solutions that are in market.
And then the last part actually is very much what we insisted on. If you are now an IT admin, you are used, and you're using Office 365. You're used to a specific user experience as an IT admin on how to provision rooms. How many of you are actually using Office 365? About half, a little over half. That's actually also our data. I think we have now more users in online than in on-prem. And therefore, if you are an IT admin that is using Office 365, you're used to the IT admin portal. And in that IT admin portal, you actually can manage any aspect of your deployment. And we will go through in the great detail into the steps there. But if you then would need to go to somewhere else to actually provision the cloud video interop, that sucks. So in that context, we make it sure that you, when you buy this and when you administer this, that we are actually tightly integrating that whole experience that Polycom brings to the table, also from an IT admin perspective, into the IT admin portal. We will come back to that in a moment.
And I guess part of that piece is, you know, deploying this stuff. I mean, anyone who's deployed any of this infrastructure on-prem knows that there are a number of challenges around it. One of the things that we're going to talk about in more detail is how easy this new service will make it for you to have the ability to do this without having an investment in on-premises video infrastructure. So we talked about experience earlier, and I just wanted to give you a view of how that looks. And this is something which is evolving over time. There are solutions in market which do make this better, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But traditionally, what was offered in market was, hey, instead of everyone joining the Skype for Business meeting, let's just tell everyone that they need to dial some third-party MCU. And this was something that was probably a much easier sell when Link 2010 was in market, because Link 2010 was not, it wasn't geared so much towards video as Link 2013 and Skype for Businesses. So of course, back then, telling people, hey, everyone dial a virtual meeting room, it was doable. It was confusing, but there was some significant gains around the experience in doing that. Whereas today, there are no gains. It's just complexity, and as we mentioned earlier, the experience is just broken.
And let there be no mistake about it, right? So ultimately, you as a company will need to choose whether you are using the MCU of Microsoft, the one that is in Office 365 in Skype for Business, that you essentially anchor all your users in that particular meeting, or whether you are going to use a competitive bridge. So in that sense, the thing that we as Microsoft thought is extremely important is that we actually preserve the usage of our particular MCU. And then we can actually create that, for example, every room that is joining is visible as an individual video endpoint in that roster, is visible as an individual video endpoint in your active speaker and your gallery range. And we are actually also able to do special things, like, for example, what you saw during the Gurdeep keynote is that when you have a VTC join, you actually are using the pano pane that is in our Skype for Business client. That's not visible on this slide. I should have thought about that earlier. But you can actually see that there is a whole strip of context there where we present the full view of the VTC on the other side if you have an immersive experience. So that aspect of having the customer, all your end users, anchor on the MCU, on this video engine that we have in Office 365 in Microsoft, gives us those abilities. And that also allows you to do then a lot of things that you are used to. If you are in Skype for Business, you are used to that if you want to, for example, mute a person, that you can go in that roster and you can right click if you're a presenter, and then at that very moment you have this option to mute, not in this particular case than a user, but a particular room. And people can unmute themselves as well. If you are locking the video spotlight, with other words, if you want to have that particular room in focus for all the users, you can actually do that through that same roster that you have. So those are capabilities that actually start getting lost once you are starting to move to a different MCU.
Okay, so let's dig a bit more into the differentiation between some of the competing solutions. And this is specific to the new Polycom Real Connect service for Office 365, and I didn't name it. So it's a bit of a mouthful. But we'll go through some of the differences. We'll start, first of all, with the top left there. So obviously the first thing is scheduling the meeting. Now, with a lot of third-party solutions, scheduling the invitation can either require a plugin or it will require some sort of manual footer information. Now, there are various disadvantages with both. The first one is obviously with a plugin, you have to deploy it. So as an IT admin, I have to ensure that this plugin is deployed to all my desktops, and it's compatible. You know, the minute we upgrade at that point to a new version of Outlook or Office, we have to then manage the compatibility of that plugin. So it's a bit of a headache for IT admins.
But apart from that, it's also a headache for the end user, right? Now all of a sudden you have two plugins, because what is this end user used to? Your users are used to actually using the Skype for Business plugin. So now all of a sudden I need to just start thinking, okay, hey, now I've got two plugins. I've got one for Skype for Business, and now I've got another one for this other one. How am I going to do this? And that's the part that we are trying to address. So we have one plugin, and the moment that you as an IT admin enable your particular user for the interop service that we have in Office 365 from Polycom, magically, and we'll come back to that in greater detail, there is this extra link in there, and people do not need to think, because you as an IT admin have decided to give this right of interop to that particular user.
Yeah, the other approach is the meeting footer configuration, and that is plugin free. But the disadvantage there is that we can't really get that information in front of an end user. They can't see it so easily. We can't customize it as easily. So it's just not as effective. So one of the things that we've done together with Microsoft is we will be updating that existing add-in that you have when you schedule a Skype for Business meeting, so that when you are licensed, and we'll talk a bit more about this later, but when you're licensed and enabled for this new service, that new scheduling information will populate your invites automatically.
And one more detail about that, right? So this plugin, this updated plugin is not, it's going to be rolled out with every Skype for Business client. So when you update essentially your Skype for Business client with your users, automatically when you install the Skype for Business client, it actually updates the add-in as well that goes into Outlook. So no extra hassle. You deploy Skype for Business, add-in is an integral part of that. So no separate things. And only those users that you enable, I stress that once again, that are licensed, that are you enable in the admin portal, will have that extra link in order to let VTCs from outside join that particular meeting by the organizer.
Yeah, exactly. So turning this all on is done via the Office 365 admin portal. So there isn't a lot new that needs to be learned. If you're already, and I could see earlier, many of you are Office 365 customers already, so you're already using the admin portal. Just think of this as having another plan, which is, you know, enrolled in, and we'll talk about that later. And once you have licenses for that plan, they can then be assigned to users. So I don't have to go off and speak to, you know, a third party, a system integrator, or look through deployment guides and get this infrastructure deployed. All of that is done behind the scenes. It's licensed via the Microsoft portal, and the service itself is supported and maintained by Polycom. So no infrastructure configuration. We mentioned Skype for Business online integration. And
let's actually stop here for a second. That's
sure.
No infrastructure required. That's a big thing, right?
It is, yeah.
Because if you are now looking at an on-premise deployment of RealConnect, no bad things, thoughts about that one, but let me go on for a moment. It is actually, first of all, it requires a lot of upfront planning. You need to actually start measuring how many people are going to use this, how big is the actual footprint of the service that I need to deploy. Then you need to make the upfront investment in the hardware. You need to make the upfront investment in the actual installation and deployment. And that's actually not the case anymore when you do the cloud option. Because if you are doing the cloud option, all this hardware and software has been deployed in Azure. So Polycom has taken care of that. And the only thing that you essentially need to do is say, who are the users that need to have VTCs join their meeting? So it's going to be essentially elastic in the sense of the only choice that you need to make is, if I look at all the people that are in my user pool, who of those do I want to actually give this opportunity to have VTCs, legacy VTCs, old VTCs, join a Skype for Business meeting? And that's the decision that you need to take. So yes, this requires some conscious decision about, hey, is this something that I want to give to all, or do I want to give it only to few? But it goes per user. And then, of course, and we will come back to that in a moment as well, this service is going to be licensed on a per-user basis. So you do not need to actually come up with an upfront investment, but you actually pay per user per month or per year if you want to lock it in for a year. You will get a code from Polycom, and then you are in business for that user. So we are not licensing rooms, but we are licensing users like you are used to in Office 365. And at that moment that you enable that user with that particular license, at that very moment, that meeting invite sent out by that particular user gets an extra link. We will show that in a second.
Thanks, Albert. So flexible join capabilities can mean a lot of things. And we're going to actually go into detail around what those are. But as I mentioned earlier, ensuring that anyone can join any type of video conferencing system into this meeting is extremely important. So when we talked to customers about how they expected this to happen, we focused on three specific areas. And one of those areas also, we looked at, well, you know, what do we do about different types of endpoints? How do we make sure that if you've got a certain type of Cisco endpoint or life-size endpoint, that you know exactly what you should dial based upon whether it's H323 or SIP or whatever. So we've done a lot in that area as well around joining and making that more simple for end users. And we'll give you some more detail on that a little bit later on. So that's definitely an improvement and something that we can do and make a lot better via the integration that we've done together with Microsoft. Modern content support, what I mean by that is support for the video-based screen sharing. Now this is a big deal for vendors in the market that have video-based content because it allows us to do a much higher frame rate video, higher fidelity video, and also do a lot less heavy lifting as well, because today vendors like Polycom have to do the remote desktop protocol when we do screen sharing interoperability. So we're doing a lot of work together with Microsoft on ensuring that both protocol standards are available at launch and also in scenarios where specific types of older clients are joining meetings, we can fall back to the old mechanism of remote desktop sharing.
And that's absolutely critical as well, right? So everyone who is working on older versions than Skype for Business. Skype for Business 2016, they actually don't have this video-based screen sharing. So you actually still need to support RDP, the remote desktop protocol that we are supporting already for many years. So both are supported in the video interop service that Polycom is building.
As Albert mentioned earlier, we're adding support for the panoramic video. We're going to talk a little bit about the experience a little bit later on. But this is something that Ilya showed for the first time in his presentation earlier this week. And this is specifically interesting for maintaining that experience of rooms where you have a much larger view. So those of you are probably familiar with the CX5100 cameras, the idea of showing a full room from a 360 degree perspective. We're effectively emulating that with these immersive or ITP systems. Was there a question?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed. What was the other protocol you're using for the modern content?
So the question was, what's the other content protocol that we're implementing as a part of the service? And that's the video-based screen sharing, which is H.264-based content. Sure. Which
yeah.
is, yeah.
So point. All the Skype for Business clients that are 2016, that are essentially supporting video-based screen sharing. And that actually not only includes the person's personal Skype for Business, but it also includes, for example, all the room systems. So when you're talking about the one that is coming for the first generation of Skype room systems, will have video-based screen sharing. The new next generation of Skype room systems has video-based screen sharing. The Service Hub, as soon as the next update comes out, has video-based screen sharing. And across the board, everyone has video-based screen sharing. Everyone happy.
The last point on this slide is also a really big deal. And again, this is aimed at IT admins. because this is a cloud service, the ongoing updates and support is obviously managed by Polycom. And as I'm sure Microsoft is aware, video interoperability is a lot of work. It's not an easy feat, and it changes, you know, very often. So of course, what Polycom does is we invest very heavily in solution testing. So we have, you know, makes and models from every type of vendor, and every time we have updates, we do testing across the board. There will be obviously a list of supported endpoints, and it is a wide list. We'll show you what we have so far. But you know, that ongoing supportability is something that we're going to manage and maintain for you. So you don't have to worry about deploying updates, which quite often have to be very carefully managed between, okay, I'm going to update my MCU to this, I'm going to update my VCS to that. And you have to basically make sure that everything is in sync. And it's a big job. There's a lot of work involved in doing that. So we're going to take that headache away from all of the IT admins that have this infrastructure deployed on-prem.
Yeah, let me cover a little elephant in the room here with a blanket, because we have released with Skype for Business Server 2015 our video interop server. And that's actually also part of that on-prem package that we are delivering, and it's still supported as well. It's actually this detail that Adam was speaking about that gives us the major headache. We supported a subset of Cisco devices. And that was what is in scope of this video interop server. That is not, as it turns out, to be enough for you as a customer. And we do not have the appetite, to be very blunt, to actually start expanding the list of the supported devices. So that's why we actually now are turning to Polycom and essentially build this cloud video interop service capability into our product, so that we can actually attach a service like the one from Polycom into our cloud and support a much wider range, because a vendor like Polycom has the resources and the appetite to support this wide range. Now, we will come back to that then. Hey, can we actually attach this cloud video interop service to on-prem? Not at this very moment, but maybe in the future. And then you might have a better alternative, actually, to the video interop service that ships with the server that we support. So the question is, okay, hey, you have explained this now, but if I am actually in this process of moving from on-prem to in the cloud, is there any way that we could support hybrid? The only thing that I could recommend is that if you are already moving into the cloud, that you prioritize those users that are being moved into the cloud first, that you want to actually consume the service. We support Skype for Business Server together with Skype for Business Online in hybrid modes. But we, at this very moment, don't have a capability, unless you have the user hosted in the cloud, to actually attach this video interop service to that particular user. So that's the strategy that you should go in that particular case. Of course, you're out of luck if you say, hey, I don't want to be in the cloud at all, because then you only have the video interop server that we ship, or you, again, need to go to a third-party product like the Real Connect, which is also available on-prem. But then you have the headaches of, okay, hey, how do I actually plan this capacity and those type of things?
Can I ask a related question?
Of course.
Does the user's Exchange mailbox also need to be in the cloud, or is it just Skype for Business Online?
So the question is whether Exchange needs to be in the cloud or not. And that's actually, according to me, it's not necessary that you're...
No, it can be on-prem or in the cloud.
Yeah, because we actually stamped that meeting as a Skype for Business plugin, and we interface only with our Skype for Business in online. So the mailbox does not need to be. It's all done through that little plugin that goes into Outlook.
Great, thanks.
Sure. Okay.
So... before we go in great detail and pull this all apart, we have a little video that we wanted to play of the particular experience. And we are going to go slowly on this one, because then we can give some color commentary already. So the first thing that we wanted to address is this whole scheduling. There we said, okay, hey, the scheduling is actually nothing else than what people are used to. So let me pause here for a moment. So This is the particular plugin that we spoke about. So the moment that you actually do this plugin, you actually already are used to that it has links in there. The normal one-click join, the join Skype meeting via the internet, is one. If you are actually licensing our PSTN conferencing, the dial-in bridge that we have as a fallback for those who are not connected, there is a second list on there. So once you are actually scheduling this meeting and you set the time, he really needs to think hard about how long this meeting is going to be. Okay, so let me see if I can speed this up a little. So this is the meeting join that everyone is used to. Done. Let me go back a little. Now if you actually have the person enabled for this, there is an extra thing in there. Let me actually go back for a second. I should have taken screenshots here. Here it is. So you now can actually dial the conference, and then you have this Real Connect service. I will show that in greater detail in a moment.
So what you're seeing here in this instance is the on-prem experience. So with on-prem, we see this footer information. And as you could see, it took Albert a moment to find it. And again, you know, this is something that we're looking to solve with the online service. Instead of it being at the footer of the email or the invitation, it will be, you know, in front of the invitation, so you can see it a lot more clearly.
And then when you load, so this is where we spoke about. Okay, hey, the immersive telepresence system appears in this panel view. We showed that as well on Monday. Let's go for it. And this is then the second, if you have a second immersive room up here, it's over there. If you are joining a video interrupt call from the remote endpoint, if you are lucky enough to actually have a console that you have paid for, then it appears in the calendar there. If it has a mailbox, or if you here, it appears in the calendar in the Polycom one. And then because you can just do the one-click join, that is the one that is, if you're using the Telepresence Trio, Real Presence Trio, at that very moment, you can do the one-click join as well. And this is then on the other side, actually. Go ahead.
Are you going to talk more about the requirements to get the one-click join from Cisco endpoints?
Yeah, we can talk a bit about that later on.
So the question is about, can we talk more about the one-click join from Cisco? Video sharing during the meeting. It appears there where you expect it. So when people start sharing, they add it. And then you have the regular place where the content appears, not inside one of those little blockies where you have the gallery, but you actually have it in the place and the stage of that. And if you, of course, are on the other side, it appears on that second monitor. So that is just to give you a flavor of that. Let's go back to the PowerPoint and puzzle this apart.
So some of the benefits here that we, is there a question? Yeah.
Does content support PowerPoint upload is the question.
Yeah, so the content, PowerPoint content is HTML5 based, and that's not something that's supported right now. It is something that's more of a roadmap item, so I can't give you a timeline on that right now.
But it depends on from which site you're sharing this content, right? So if you are sharing this actually from the Skype for Business user, then of course it appears in Fidelity on the other side. If you are, however, sharing content from essentially the other side of the equation, namely the VTCs, the legacy VTCs, that's what Adam was talking about. So given the fact that you anchor your meeting typically in the Skype for Business meeting, you actually do need to upload your PowerPoint there.
So that's different from the on-prem experience?
Is that different from the on-prem experience?
No, it's the same.
Okay.
So just to quickly highlight some of the things that we showed you there. So the first thing we showed you was obviously the Outlook scheduling Albert walked you through how we scheduled the meeting, which was simply a Skype for Business meeting. Joining, the users didn't actually dial anything. They just clicked a button in the calendar. And we'll talk about that in more detail later. From a device perspective, we had multiple devices we showed there, but the devices go far beyond what we just showed you a moment ago. And we'll talk a little bit more about the devices that will be initially supported when we launch the service.
When you are rolling it out, actually, it is the normal procedure, like I spoke about, of this Skype for Business plugin that you have in Outlook from the end user point of view. The one thing that you do need to pay attention to, of course, is that you actually point people out that there is this extra link in the invite. So the people who are receiving this, you need to make sure that they are aware that they can now join one of those traditional VTCs into that meeting by following the instructions, either by the one-click join if that device supports it, or by going to the detailed web page that says, hey, if you have this kind of device, this is how you actually join it.
So let's talk a little bit about the experience in the new service, because what we just saw just a moment ago was a video of the on-premises experience. So online, it's slightly different, very slightly. So as you can see on the top there, we have two layouts. So on the left, we have a layout from a standards-based VTC or room system. On the right, we have a Skype for Business client. And unlike the on-premises solution, what we're seeing here is an instance of each endpoint displayed within the gallery. So this is often in the industry called a gateway mode. So every endpoint that joins effectively gets retranscoded from H.264 AVC into H.264 SVC. And then it's displayed individually within the gallery. So if we went over a certain number of endpoints, then those endpoints would obviously start to display in the sitting row, and they could be pinned or promoted to the gallery view if that was something that was required.
So this is then what the people see who are on those standard VTCs. They see the Skype for Business users in one of those little Hollywood squares or whatever they call it. They see the other rooms in one of those blocks. And this is what the user sees on the side of a Skype for Business client. So here, and this is, by the way, this is the desktop experience. You saw the Mac has gone to bigger video. And of course, the room systems that we are introducing with the next generation Skype room systems has that same larger layout. But in the traditional desktop client of PC, of Skype for Business, you see that every room appears here as an individual video endpoint into the meeting. And that's that gateway mode, right? So it's very different from the other mode that exists, where you actually have that all the meetings are going into a virtual meeting room, those legacy meetings, and then there is one video feed that is pushed out to the Skype for Business client, which has this composite of all those VMR, those virtual meeting room layouts and connected endpoints. So very important difference. The second part is essentially when it's an immersive telepresence room or an immersive VTC. And there you can see that you have typically the standing row of all those seats of the people that are sitting on the other side. And that's the row that you see here in this particular case. This is the typical telepresence experience with regards to, by the way, to the video, because you know that the content is actually not in there in that particular screen, it's on another screen. And then, if you are looking at that particular stream, that pano view of that immersive telepresence system is, by Polycom, projected inside the room or inside the desktop client that we have. So you can see the full room view, exactly the same video stream that you have here, into the pano view of the Skype for Business client on the PC desktop.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously those immersive ITP systems, they often come in different shapes and sizes. So some of them will have two cameras, some will have three, some will have four. So what you're seeing effectively in this illustration here is a system with four cameras. So if it had three cameras, then obviously it wouldn't be as wide. If it had two, again, it would decrease in size. A question at the back there.
Is the gateway on-premise in this particular case? No, the gateway is actually...
The gateway
Gateway mode, yeah.
No immediate plans right now. I wouldn't say no, but it's possible. But we're focused on this right now.
Yeah. So one more thing with regards to the user experience. So the active part, the active speaker part, actually is projected also in the gallery itself.
Yes, it is.
So let's actually call it out explicitly that if you have in that immersive telepresence of those six people that are projected here, if you have two people speaking, that camera becomes the active speaker window, just like you also have in the Roundtable HD, and is projected on the right spot inside the gallery. So let's go through it in one more detail. You just create a Skype meeting. In there now, there is this extra link. Then you join exactly the way as you do across the board. So you join from any Skype for Business or Link client. Because they can just join the Skype for Business meeting. Then you, if you are on the other side, if you're on a VTC room, you actually do this one-touch join if the device supports it, either as a native device or as a, let's say, a Cisco device or Polycom or life-size device. And then once, boom, you're in the meeting, and you can actually see on both sides the participants as well as the content.
Question about that, yes.
So the question is, okay, hey, if you, and was this for on-prem or in the cloud? For on-prem, so that one I cannot answer. So if you are in a Skype meeting and you have actually uploaded content there, where do those traditional systems, if I am not supposed to call them legacy systems, where do they actually display that content then?
If it was PowerPoint content that was uploaded into the meeting, which is what I assume you mean, then that's not a protocol that's supported today for on-prem or online. If you wanted to share PowerPoint, then you'd need to share an application or share your desktop.
Or just like you...
So I think he accepted as it is, kind of confusing, so it was recollecting.
Sure.
Okay.
So how many total number of endpoints VTCs can join the meeting?
How many total endpoints of VTCs can actually join a meeting?
Good question. We're still working through the scalability numbers and what we can do there. There's a number of things, and you know, I assume at some point someone's going to say, "Hey, what about licenses? You know, how much does it cost?" And right, yeah. So I can't talk about that yet today. We're just finalizing that. Right now, we're really focused on the architecture, the scalability, and we're going to actually go into a lot more detail in a moment about the architecture and how it all works, but. I can't comment on licenses yet.
Can you do 5 or 10 and join them?
Absolutely 5. We're still working on what the upper limit is. Sure.
Cool.
Are you guys going to cover the media flows?
Are we going to cover the media flow?
Yes,
actually,
we will.
Here we go.
So this is a high-level media flow. We're going to go into more detail. Yeah. But basically, before we go into the detail, what effectively happens behind the scenes is we have a series of components which is doing a number of things. So the first thing we're doing is we're taking the audio, and the audio we can take as is. In many cases, it's G722. We can take that as is, no problem. When it comes to video, we have to do a bit of work. So we have to take the video. And we have to translate it or transcode it into a format that is supported by the room system. And then the final thing we need to do is we need to convert the signaling and also the content as well. So we manage that between the two worlds, and we'll talk a bit more about how that works in some detail. We've got some other slides to go through that. So before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about the join mechanisms that are going to be supported in this service. And what we're trying to solve. So of course, as you're all aware, many VTCs today, they come with these complex remote controls. We don't all have the luxury of having a fancy controller. And we need to take that and basically make it a lot easier. So we looked at these different ways in which we can allow people to join the meetings. And the other thing here is that in many cases, VTCs can be registered in multiple ways. So they could be registered with H323 or SIP or even TIP if it's a Cisco telepresence system. So we have a number of mechanisms to join the meeting. So I'm going to walk through these one at a time. The first one, as Albert's walked you through, is obviously the most simple. And this is where the endpoint itself has some sort of inbuilt calendaring mechanism. And we can support either via a remote control or a touch controller the ability to just go into the calendar and just do a single click to join that meeting. Now, that does require, as someone at the back there mentioned, an exchange mailbox that is assigned to that room. So in many cases, people will deploy a resource mailbox, and they'll use that for not only booking the room, but booking the VTC as well. And that, as we spoke about earlier, can be exchange online or exchange on premises. That's fine. The other mechanism, and this is actually more similar to the Microsoft Video Interoperability Server, is basically giving each tenant an IVR service, or what is traditionally called a virtual entry queue. And this gives you the ability to effectively have a speed dial, if you like, on all of your systems that everyone clicks, and then they get some sort of announcement service that says, enter your conference ID. And the conference ID will be automatically populated in the meeting invite, as Albert showed you earlier, and we'll show you that again in a moment. And that ID is generated by a specific ID that the tenant has, and then an ID that is given to that specific meeting. So I'll dial that information via my remote, and I'll join the meeting automatically. The other thing that you can do is you can dial directly into the meeting. So instead of you getting a voice that says, you know, what's your conference number, I can actually dial a string that allows me to go straight into the call and not, you know, just basically bypass everything. So that's also another option. The final option is if you have some sort of on-prem dial plan that your VTCs are registered to. So say, for example, your VTCs are registered to VCS and that has some sort of dial plan deployed on it. You could, for example, configure it so that only the conference ID needs to be dialed and the tenant key is automatically populated for you because the tenant key is obviously global to your organization. So there are some other things you can do there to make things more simple. And we'll look to document those when we release the service. Question, yes.
Can the Skype client directly call the
VTC? Can the Skype client directly call the VTC? No. You have to set up a meeting, and it goes via that meeting. So there's no direct connection as such.
Is this something that you guys are working on? Let's say
nope. Oh, if you have the direct registration, yeah, then at that point in time. So yes, the question or the remark was, hey, by the way, this doesn't actually apply to the Polycom VTC because they do direct registration. Yes, that's correct.
And it's probably worth calling out that if you have a modern Polycom VTC, then you probably wouldn't need this service in the first place. You know, this is really geared towards, you know, older systems and specifically Cisco systems that typically obviously don't work well with Skype for Business. So, all up, what are all the features that we're looking to have at launch? And I think we've covered a lot of this, but we'll go into some of these in a little bit more detail. So, in the first item there, we talk about Real Connect features that are hosted in Azure. Now, obviously, our Polycom infrastructure is being hosted for you here and managed. And this all takes place in Azure. And the advantages for us there, obviously, is that, you know, we don't have to worry about network connectivity between our infrastructure and Skype for Business Online because, you know, we have all kinds of resilient connectivity there that Microsoft already has in place. So that's great.
Let me actually add something to that. Sure. It is a service that Polycom runs, right? So Polycom is there, the person who is actually, when you buy the service, it is Polycom that actually runs and manages and maintains the service and remains the quality of the service. Unlike other solutions where you can put things in Amazon Web Services or in Azure, and you have to run it yourself and you have to maintain it yourself. So that is the big difference here as well, I think, to certain other solutions that are out there.
Yeah.
I did not hear your question. So what does the last line say? Sorry to call you out on this one, but we will get to that in a second. The last line says sold through the familiar Polycom channels at this point in time. So that's the plan of how we go to market. So you buy it from the Polycom dealer or reseller that you're working with traditionally.
And we'll walk through that process as well, because that's probably a little bit ambiguous. So obviously this is initially available for Skype for Business Online. We had some questions earlier about what about if I'm Skype for Business on-prem. So, you know, that's something we're potentially looking at, as Albert mentioned. Seamless scheduling we talked about. We have vendor-specific dial-in details. So one of the things that we're looking to do when we launch this service is much like dial-in conferencing, PSTN dial-in conferencing, where you have dial-in information page, which gives you numbers that you'd have that are globally available. In our case, we're going to have a page which allows you to look at how to dial specific types of VTCs into that meeting. And not only will it give you information about how to dial those VTCs into the meeting, but it will actually give you information based upon the location of where you are at. So we're going to use geographic DNS to understand where you are and give you, you know, H323 IP addresses in your region so that we can make sure that instead of you connecting to an MCU that's hosted in North America when you're based in EMEA, we can keep the traffic local for you and effectively leverage the Azure network rather than the open internet.
And all this information, by the way, is a link inside that email that gets sent out, right? So let's be very aware of that one as well. This is not something you need to explicitly start informing your end users about. It's in the email. You need to make them aware that they now have this capability, and that email invite that comes in for this particular meeting has a detailed page URL in there.
We talked about the multiple join mechanisms, specifically click to join, the IVR and direct dial. We talked about the immersive telepresence support with panoramic video, bi-directional content sharing with video-based screen sharing. We have a tap which is about to start, so this is the VBSS support for anyone that's in the tap here. VBSS is coming just after the tap. As Albert mentioned, this is operated and supported by Polycom, and the licensing is on a per-user basis, and that can be a monthly license or it can be an annual license.
It's a subscription.
Right.
All right, so what has actually done happen? So if you look at this whole admin user workflow, first of all, you need to start looking at, okay, hey, is Skype for Business deployed? At that moment that it is deployed, you as an IT admin need to do a step, and we will go with some screenshots about this in a moment. But you need, in order as an IT admin, to be able to actually get this particular service provisioned, you need to, first of all, buy something. So that's the first thing. And at the moment that you buy that, you will get from Polycom a GUID, a string of letters and characters, numbers. And at that very moment that you have that key, that string, you need to enter that into Office 365. For that, we are using an app that you need to install. All of you are familiar that we now have this little waffle, as we call that, on the left-hand side, on the top. And there, you actually also have apps that you can buy on Office 365 Marketplace. The buying, by the way, is not always at the price. There is a $0 app that you will install in there. So you, as an IT admin, install that app. And in that particular app, that's the only thing, actually, that that app does, you can actually apply that key. And once you have applied that key, so then at that very moment, you have a number of licenses, the number that you have bought, that you can start applying to the individual end users. So just like you, how many of you are familiar with provisioning PSTN conferencing in Office 365? few of you only. I should show you, actually. If we have a little bit of time, I will actually show you how that works. But essentially, you have got a number of licenses. You then go into your Active Directory that you have in Office 365. And one by one, you can pick the users and enable them for that user. And every time when you enable a user, the counter of the number that you have bought goes down. And you can actually also, on the spot, you can flip the thing on and off. And literally, on the spot, that means that if you decide now that for the next day you want to apply, to enable other users, you can turn the slider off, and you can turn the slider on of the other user. And it takes approximately 4 to 5 minutes before that information is replicated across Office 365, and that new user will have this capability, and that old user's capability will have been taken away. Of course, that is not the best user experience when that user just had scheduled a meeting with the Cloud Video Interop and you have taken away their rights, because they will not be able to have a meeting joined by those VTCs anymore. But the flexibility is there, and that is what this app is all about, and that is what it's all about of integrating it so deeply into the Office 365. Then from the end user, I spoke about this extra link that appears. We will show that in greater detail in a second as well. If you are enabled, you will send out an invite where that hyperlink and that information about how to join a meeting via a traditional VTC is in there. And anyone then can join, whether they are inside your organization or outside your organization, because it is a link that you send out to whoever you invite to your meeting. And that means that also companies who are outside can just join, because you have that capability enabled for that particular user. Then the last part. If you have a VTC that actually is able to do this one-click join, there is no trouble. If they have a VTC that actually doesn't support that one-click join, then, of course, you need to go through that detail page and either use those mechanisms via the IVR, or you need to use the capability via the other mechanisms that we are giving, so the entering the key and the conference ID. So let's show that a little bit more in detail. I spoke about that there is this waffle. And by the way, the waffle shows usually on the left here. So it's before the word admin. But you here, this is what we call the waffle. That's in the top of Office 365. When you go to the marketplace of Office 365, you type in the word Polycom, because that is, there is only one Polycom app at this point in time. And you will actually see a search result here of this Polycom app. That Polycom app, as I said, once you install that, it has a field, it has data in there, where you can actually enter that key that you have purchased from your Polycom channel, so from the resellers. You will get an email, and this is your key, this is the amount of users that are in there. And that app, by the way, that runs inside the Office 365 portal, right? So you don't need to remember any second username and password, etc. It is actually just a single sign-on, and it actually allows you to seamlessly integrate with this whole Next experience. Let me actually speak a little bit more about that Next experience. This is what I spoke about. You have in Office 365 a list of users. Once you click on one of those users, you now have a new line that appears there, namely of what licenses you have available in Office 365. This is the standard license. Well, we hope that it will be your standard E5, in which we sell our own first-party Microsoft product. But then all of a sudden, there is also this Cloud Video Interop service. Oh, let me go actually back for a second. And at that very moment that you turn it on, you slide this slider from left to right. At that very moment, the particular user, Adam Jacobs, has been enabled for Cloud Video Interop service. You can actually set the location of this user. And by the way, there are two places in the Office 365 portal where you need to do that. So be always aware of that, that link that is there. And that actually determines where those meetings are hosted. So you are able to actually set the location of where your meetings are hosted close to where the actual user is. So that is the flow from an IT admin perspective of how to enable a user. It is like any Tom, Dick, and Harry can do that, and certainly an IT admin. It all goes, by the way, via this UX. I have to call that one out. There is no PowerShell equivalent as such for doing this. It all goes via this particular portal. Then once you have enabled that user, I said it takes approximately 4 to 5 minutes, is my experience with the PSTN conferencing. The moment that you have waited those 4 to 5 minutes, there is this extra link. And I've blown it up here a little bit. I should have taken a better screenshot. But essentially, this is the link that appears here. This is the link that you need from the legacy VTC. You need to actually start entering in order to do this this join mechanism. So that's the extra link that appears in the invite. So now we go into it in a little bit more of a step-by-step mode. Maybe you can take this one.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the question is, hey, so if I'm in a PSTN conferencing, there is a conference ID, and is there now a different conference ID actually of the one that you have for the video interop? At this point in time, those are different. We are looking into it, whether we can make them the same actually. But at this very moment, there are two conference IDs that are populated in the meeting invite and not just one. So what is being referred to is here, this conference ID that you have here, 12345, is different from this code that you have over here. And this is the one that you are using for when you dial in via the phone to PSTN conferencing. This is the one that you are using for from VTC when you dial in. Is that a different experience than on-prem?
Yeah, I mean, on-prem slightly different because remember, on-prem there's no concept of sort of ACP, whereas with Skype for Business Online there's, you know, ACPs, and they also have different conference IDs as well. So one thing that was important here is to make sure that when the video endpoints join the meeting, it's obviously the same meeting as the audio or PSTN dial-in participants.
Yeah, so an ACP stands for audio conferencing provider. That is when you buy the conferencing minutes from a third party and not like as it is part of E5 or of the PSTN conferencing add-on from Microsoft itself. As you know now, we are selling in a lot of countries, we are selling PSTN conferencing as Microsoft, and the ACPs is more of a, yeah. So we are trying to address that, but we have not found a good solution that works across the board. So that's because of we do not know what the ACPs are doing with regards to their conference ID.
Why not solve it for Microsoft
PSTN conferencing? That is a good question, yeah. That is a good suggestion. But like I said, we are working on it, but it would be nice if it actually would be consistent because one user experience is better than two user experiences. Adam.
Thanks, Albert. So just to walk through what goes on behind the scenes when we're dialing into a meeting here. So obviously the first thing that happens is we have that invite, which Albert showed you. It's gonna have, you know, one of the ways that could be joined is by dialing the specific number, and that would be the tenant ID plus the conference ID that's dedicated to the video interop meeting. And in this case, we have two endpoints that have dialed into that meeting, VTCA, VTCB. They basically will dial into the Polycom service hosted in Azure. And then once those endpoints have dialed in, and we'll talk about globally how that pins together in a moment, but once they've dialed in, then we start to basically join from our MCU in Azure into the Skype for Business Online meeting, because behind the scenes, what's happened is Microsoft have basically told us, you know, this conference is happening here. And when I say here, I mean specifically we're given, you know, the focus URI for that conference that user has scheduled. And that's an online Skype for Business user.
The other thing which is important to call out is that actually then there's essentially what we call this gateway, right? So you have a Polycom part and you've got a Microsoft part. The media that is flowing between Polycom and Microsoft, from that moment, first of all, it flows via the Microsoft dedicated network. So with regards to where you actually are dialing in and where you actually are landing in Polycom and where the actual meeting is scheduled. Oh, you have that in greater detail.
I think we've got something on that. Actually, we'll go through that first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then it actually, what flows over that pipe is actually media that Microsoft can understand. So when it would have come in with a different codec or with different protocols, we would not even see that anymore because Polycom takes care of everything, making it sure that it actually works with Skype for Business.
So obviously we're looking to deploy this globally. And given that the Azure service is also deployed globally, then we want to take advantage of the global redundancy that's available to us. So within each instance of the Real Connect service, we have our own resilience deployed. So for example, there's multiple MCUs When someone dials into that service and they hit what we call the call redirector, which effectively is like a hardware load balancer, it's distributed amongst multiple MCUs. And if an MCU was to become unavailable, then the VTC would be sent to an alternate MCU. And because of the architecture there, we can basically elastically scale up and down, bring in more MCUs as we like. Everything is based upon software and Hyper-V, and everything has the same scalability that you'd expect within your own private clouds. Now, what would happen if, for example, there was some sort of connectivity issue between your VTC and our Azure instance? So, for example, we lost that connection, or we lost, for whatever reason, your connection to the Azure data center, then we even have scalability or resilience across multiple centers. So if you were based in the US, for example, in the West Coast, we could then redirect you to the next nearest data center or service instance. And in this case, it would be our central one. So, and this is obviously a US example here, and we're launching in the US first, but it will work the same way globally as well.
We did not say anything when it's going to be available, but at the end of the presentation, we will say that before the end of the year, this will be available in a preview. So, and that was actually also part of the keynote of Gurdeep on Monday. So this is going to be here this year in the United States, and it's going to roll out globally after that. Another question that comes up all the time is whether this is going to be available in the government cloud. So let me preempt that question. Yes, there is a plan to actually make this available also in the government cloud. Then there is a question about, what about all our local, go local data centers? That one, the roadmap is a little bit more fuzzy about, but we need to know whether there is enough interest in order to go there. So with other words, in Germany, they have a German-administered Azure data center. So those are types of things that we need to address later. A question at the back first. Yeah, so the question is there any plan for bandwidth planning? This, of course, needs to be integrated in our Skype operations framework as well. So we have now, the number one question in the last few years that I get when I'm working at the booth at a show like this is, hey, how do I get started? How do I start from 0 to 1 or 0 to 100, all the little steps that I need to take? What we are doing currently is we are introducing, and there are other sessions about that, this Skype operations framework. A Skype operations framework is essentially a step-by-step manual that a system integrator or an IT admin should follow step-by-step. In there are also chapters about, for example, how to deploy room systems. And in that particular chapter, we actually are addressing, okay, hey, these are the typical bandwidth needs that are needed, et cetera, et cetera. At this very moment, not yet, but it should be, yes. And one question further back.
So kind of similar. To move video traffic off net, there's got to be trade-offs in terms of quality and performance rather than having an MCU on premise.
Yeah, so the question is, okay, hey.
Yeah, so I guess the...
Can you repeat the question? So
yeah, thank you. Yeah, I will. So the question is, what's the differentiator? I could purchase a managed service from someone else, and, it could be... I could leverage a private connection of some sort, maybe, MPLS or IPVPN with, QoS, blah, blah, blah. So I guess that's the ultimate question. And the answer is, because this is a multi-tenanted... platform, then obviously the costs are significantly lower than a service like that. Now, you can go off and you can do that with anyone, but this has got a far better integration. It will be much lower cost. And if that is a concern of yours, then there is an offering that Microsoft has, which they call ExpressRoute, which gives you the ability to have that managed connection as well.
Oh, can a VTC join a Skype meeting broadcast? Interesting question. We have not tried that, actually. But we, so the answer is no?
Not without?
Not without more work. Okay. So yeah. So my logical answer would have been, well, it looks to me us as a Skype endpoint. So if you are invited as a Skype endpoint, you actually should be. But according to my more wise colleague over here, sometimes even my boss. He says, not without more work. So it's not something that is supported at this point in time.
You could probably, so you could use an endpoint as a broadcast point. You couldn't produce and manage the broadcast or receive the broadcast.
Oh, yeah, that's out of the question no matter what, right? So you can have a person actually like your CEO dial in into, as a presenter into the production team, essentially, what we call the presenters of the Skype meeting broadcast. I think actually that should work. But my boss says not yet.
That's right. You could join.
You can join.
Meeting,
yes.
But you can't watch the broadcast.
You cannot watch the broadcast. No. The watching. So you can, as a, if you are the CEO and you want to dial in into the inner meeting, as we call it in a Skype meeting broadcast, it looks like any other endpoint. The point that is the difference is that your producer can never ever be the VTC endpoint, because in a Skype meeting broadcast, you have all those extra controls of who is actually the active speaker, where the content is up, et cetera, et cetera. All those controls are missing from the VTC point of view. So you have to have an external, some other person who is actually sitting there with their laptop and their Skype for Business desktop client on the PC in order to have those controls. Someone from a conference room can join the inner meeting and actually be a presenter in that particular meeting. Yes. One more question.
Two scalability questions. Is there a limitation on the number of rooms that can join a meeting? And the second question is, I know you talked about redundancy, right? If you lose, you know, access to a particular cloud, it automatically gets moved over to another. What about cascading? Let's say I have too many rooms joining the meeting. Can you, and let's say for whatever reason, a particular grid is maxed out, can you cascade?
Yeah. I'll take the second question first, because I can answer it. So the second question there was, if I have, in this example, my US West, if we go back here, so if I have my VTC in the West Coast dialing into the US West Coast instance of the RealConnect service, and then I have a East VTC joining the East instance, what happens? Is there, where is the MCU? Are there multiple MCUs? Are they cascading? What's going on? So the answer there is that the West, so for the West VTC, he will leverage an MCU in the West Coast, and that will join the Skype for Business meeting directly. And then the East Coast VTC will join an MCU in the East Coast, and that will leverage an MCU there to join the same meeting. So we will be cascading multiple MCUs within each location. Correct.
Yep.
Each user comes into their respective Polycom cloud. Yeah.
And then with regards to scale, we have not published anything yet. So we just had the same question about how many can join at the same time. So whether it's 5-ish, 10-ish, or 20-ish, or whatever, that one we have not fully tested yet. So we cannot speak until the service is complete about that particular part. And then, of course, it will go into our Skype operations framework, where we actually will publish this type of data. Is there a concern for a delay?
No. No, I mean, it's ultimately no different to a Skype for Business user dialing into a conference. The only thing that's happening here is that we have to transcode the video.
Exactly. So delivery, receiving part of it.
Yeah.
Maybe talking to somebody waiting for that message. Right?
So
So there's no,
There is transcoding. It won't be as quick as if you were using a Skype for Business endpoint, because the Skype for Business endpoint is encoding it itself, and then it's being relayed back and forth. There is some encoding here and some relay that's happening, but in our testing, it's unnoticeable.
Yeah, and let's also be aware, right? So the Skype media stack is evolving constantly, and You can see now that there is a lot of alignment going on in the industry, for example, between Microsoft and Google, to make sure that we actually can understand each other's codecs and essentially start using the same. We are even working on new codecs together. So those are the things that actually you can expect, where this reduction of complexity is in full progress. So let's we need to move on a little bit because we have 5 minutes left and we still have a few slides.
So Albert touched on this a little bit earlier, but behind the scenes, effectively, and this is high level, but what's happening here is obviously the Skype for Business endpoints are dialing into Skype for Business Online. So anything that's directly registered and Skype for Business capable is joining that meeting in Skype for Business Online. If it's a room system, a video room system, then it's dialing into our cloud in Azure. And then behind the scenes, we will be managing the connectivity and the transcoding and effectively cascading and joining the correct Skype for Business conference.
So the question is, can a Skype meeting room? So there are a couple of products out there that actually are built as native devices. So those are the first generation Skype room systems. Those are the next generation that we announced last Monday of Skype room systems. Those are the Service Hub. Those, no problem whatever, they can directly join. Then there are also some, I don't know what we call them, interoperable Polycom devices that actually are able to register. So Polycom has figured out on how to make that work, and they are constantly updating that nothing breaks. They can join as well. All the others that cannot do that, they actually need to join via this video interop service. Yeah, I heard that before. We need to dig into that. So the question was, hey, there are some types at this very moment with the link room systems, the first generation of Skype room systems, there is a bug where actually you cannot join as the first. And that's actually, we need to, I was in the booth when this was raised as well. We need to look into that in greater detail because that is not how it's supposed to be.
Okay.
We believe that is addressed. But no matter what, let's take this offline. It's not how it's supposed to.
For sure, the next generation of Skype room systems, that is absolutely addressed, just to make that clear for everyone.
Oh, in the next generation of Skype room systems, my colleagues.
All the time, every day, all day, twice on Sundays.
Okay.
And for any video room systems, they will join the lobby and be admitted, just to so you're aware of what the experience is there.
So next, almost final slide.
Prerequisites, what do you need? So one of the things that comes up quite often is, so what do I register my endpoints to in this new world? And the answer is that initially what we want you to do is basically keep everything as is. So if you've got a whole load of Cisco endpoints, then chances are you've probably got Call Manager or VCS, VCSE for firewall traversal or something else. So we're not saying you need to rip any of that out. You can keep all of that as is. And dialing, obviously one of the things that's important here is that you need to be able to dial out from there and into this cloud service. So if you're already dialing out to external parties today, then, which I assume you probably are, then great. That's one of the prerequisites and you tick the box. One of the questions that comes up is, hey, what if I want to rip out all of my Cisco infrastructure. And you know, that's something we're looking at, but it's not something that will be available for phase one.
Yeah, the other thing, so here it actually is called patch. I should have corrected that. You need to have that new plugin, right? So you need to make sure that you update your Office client, your Outlook client in order, or actually to be very precise, your Skype for Business client in order to do that. You also need to make sure that you, of course, can access the service. So you have to open the FQDNs in your security, in your firewalls, in order to be able to address those. So in order to not be too late, what are the VTCs that we are going out of the gate with?
So right now, this is a list of endpoints that we're testing today. I'm very interested in feedback from anyone here that thinks we've got a any kind of glaring omissions in this list. But we have a range of Cisco endpoints. We have a life-size 220 endpoint, and then we have some of the older Polycom endpoints that don't have Skype for Business interoperability for video. So there's also some other endpoints in there that we have that we sell that are part of our portfolio that we wanted to just make sure everything works as well.
There's a lot of... go ahead if you have a question. Oh, yeah, there was no MX300, but that's the MX series, actually. So if you look at the MX200...
Yeah, so there are obviously a number of endpoints in that series and other series here, but we specifically tested the firmware on, in this case, an MX200. Sorry?
G1 or G2?
I'll have to come back to you on that.
But for that, we have the next slide, which is our final slide. Namely, okay, hey, where do you go for more information? There is already a press release from Polycom out there. There is also going to be more details, of course, available on the Polycom website. So go to Real Connect, because the on-premise product is essentially the DNA that went into the cloud, of course, with a lot of work in order to make it work in our cloud, in Office 365, but the DNA, after all, is the same, and you can see a lot of similarities there with regards to what is supported and what's not supported with regards to devices. There's also, like I said, a Skype meeting broadcast that we did 2 weeks ago, I think now, or maybe it's a week ago. Time flies nowadays. This product is going to go in preview this year here in the United States, in North America, not just the United States, including Canada. And then once we are very confident, we start rolling this out on a global basis, or actually Polycom does. No, so we had a Skype meeting broadcast in which we actually did a lot of detail that we are presenting here, where we also are having these type of details. So we say if you want to have more information, go also look at that one, because Adam and I did a nice banter, and we were joined by Angela to talk more about other details that we have. I think we covered most of it actually today, but yep. It's just in case you want to look it back after all. More questions? Yeah, so what is required on the Cisco side in order to make this one-click join work?
So we're looking to host that also within the service. So you wouldn't, again, there wouldn't be a requirement to sort of host that on-prem. However, one thing that we do need to do, specifically for Cisco endpoints, is we need to have firewall connectivity to the endpoints themselves so we can push the scheduling information. So one of the things that we're looking at is having a very lightweight application that will run on-premises that gives us the firewall traversal that we need to push the scheduling info. Now, if that is completely out of the question and all your firewall guys or security guys are like, hey, I'm not doing that, then you can run that application on-premises also, but that would not be, you know, the off-the-shelf approach. Question at the back.
Group series.
So the question was, if I had a Polycom group series, would I use this service or would I just basically join the meeting natively? So with Skype for Business Online today, we don't yet support online meetings. It is something we're working together with Microsoft on. So right now, as in, you know, in the next couple of months, you'd need to use this service. But the plan between us is to work on giving you native support to join those meetings without the need for any video interoperability.
I think I want to cut it off here and recommend everyone to take the eval. Always your feedback is very welcome. And also consider looking at that next generation of Skype room systems, right? Available from Polycom and Crestron and available now and at a very affordable price. It could take away a lot of this interop headaches if you were just willing to make a small investment and reuse those screens as displays and use the audio. Thank you very much for your attention. And any questions, please come up here and we will take care of those.